country crowd.
Never really see Lara struggle. And it's about 6 yards over the fence for Lara.
Well, I don't think he's only bowling short. I think he's bowling rubbish. He's bowling like my Auntie Annie when she'd had too much sherry to drink.
How about that? Absolutely brilliant from Shane Warne.
Brilliant Yorker. Absolutely brilliant. Malinga with six.
Yet another 50 by Sachin Tendulkar. He'll raise his bat.
There it is. Big 100 for Taylorson, a big 100 for England.
Short. Oh, it could be the best in the lot for Chris Gayle. Oh, my days. 40 of 9 deliveries.
Brilliant from Broad. 8 for 15. Best bowling figures on this ground.
That'll get there. Joe Root has gone to 100 here at Trent Bridge.
You are listening to Sticky Wicket on URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to the third edition of the URN cricket podcast, Sticky Wicket. Today on the show I've got Arvi, Joe and Laura, so the same crew from last week, but we've swapped the presenter around. And today we're going to be talking about Alistair Cook stepping down, a little bit about who is the best ODI team in the world at the moment, and then thirdly, why is it so hard to play away from home in cricket at the moment, and then finally, the featured player for today's podcast is Haseeb Hameed. So I'm going to bring the panellists straight into it now, and we're going to go straight on to Alistair Cook. And Laura, what are your thoughts on this?
I don't necessarily think it's that much of a surprise that he's stepped down, you know, after a series defeat against India. And I mean, he's got another child that's just come along. Captaincy is, like you said, it's something that you've got to be 100% committed to, and if you're only 95% then you can't do it. I think he's been a good captain for us. I mean, he's stood in more tests than any other player has as captain. 59, and he's, you know, won 24, lost 22, drawn 13. I think the decision really for him was what's best for me as a player and what's best for the team. And whilst he has been a good captain, I think sometimes he's been a bit... it's not been very inspired at times. And maybe we just need that like fresh look that a newer player could give to the side. Maybe somebody who's been around ODI in 2020 cricket where that mindset has already been implemented.
Okay. Harvey, what are your thoughts?
I definitely agree with Laura and the fact that, yes, Cook, to be fair, he is one of the best captains England has produced. But again, like... at the moment, yes, England do need a change after the series loss at India. And I even think that even though Cook being a good captain, I think he was better off as a player alone because of his stats. Even if you see his stats, I think the captaincy actually put him a bit down in his scoring stats. Like, if you see, he's in a pod to beat Sachin Tendulkar's test record, and he's pretty young as well. So if he actually focuses on his batting, I think he'll be much more... better for the team rather than being a captain at the moment.
Yeah, he was the youngest player to reach 10,000 runs, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
So, Joe, do you reckon he has got a long future in the side after resigning?
Yeah, I think he'd be looking to play for at least 2 or 3 years, maybe a bit more.
And I think if he does, he probably will go on to smash a few records. He should be definitely up there in terms of leading run scores of all time. But I was saying last night, it does put a bit of pressure on Cook now, weirdly, because now he's stepped down as captain, everyone expected him to go out and score hundreds of times he goes out to bat. So hopefully he'll be able to regain his sort of old form. Because if he does, I think England will be pretty strong for that. But there's a lot of pressure on whoever comes in as captain, I think.
Yeah, do you reckon Alistair Cook will be able to coexist with a new captain?
I think he will. I mean, he's got to stay in the team, really. He's got that history behind him of being one of England's best test openers. Joe said, I think there will be a certain amount of pressure on him now that he's not got the captaincy to step up and perform, but he has got that background. I think he will be able to still stay in the team, but I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on whoever comes in as captain next. I personally wouldn't have Cook to stay on for another year just because of how hectic this...
We've got the Ashes coming up as well.
The Ashes, the Champions Trophy, realistically, the person... Well, Joe Root is the one that everyone's saying is going to... And he's got a huge year ahead of him. So taking on Test captaincy as well is something that might just maybe play on his mind a bit. And I think... I personally felt we needed Joe Root the batsman more than we needed him as a captain, but...
So are there any other candidates, do you reckon?
I used to think it was Ben Stokes, to be fair, but again, his aggression just doesn't seem to be a right attitude on the outfield or the play at the moment. So, yeah, I think Joe Root is just the one who's actually going to lead the side. But if there was any other person who could lead the side, I think it should be Ben Stokes rather than anyone else, because no one else has the experience.
I think Stuart Broad was a name that was mentioned by Graham Swan the other day, but... Don't know, Stuart Broad, a Test captain.
It didn't work at T20 captain.
Level, and Test is a much bigger step up as captain, isn't it?
How about Joss Butler? He's done it a couple of times in the ODIs.
Yeah, but he's not even established himself.
If he could cement his place there in the Test team.
I think there's potential for him in the future, maybe more so as ODI or 2020 captain than Test.
Maybe to take the burden off Root if
I think Johnny Best could step up as captain, because if you see his style of play, he's one of the players I've seen, if there's a game in two innings, after the first inning, he doesn't play the similar show what he got out. So he actually looks into most of the aspects of the game. So I think if he's given such a decision, and plus he's the wicketkeeper, if I'm not wrong, and there are many players who have come out saying that the wicketkeeper deserves to be the unofficial vice captain of the side, because he's the one who kind of sees everything, how a bowler bowls, how the batsman is adjusting the situation. So I think even Johnny Best would be actually a really good candidate for the captain of the Test side.
I think Joe Root is vice captain at the moment, so Joe, all signs would lead to suggest that Joe Root will become the next captain.
Yeah, I think Root will definitely become the next captain. I think there's so much doubt about that. I just think the worry, obviously, is everyone's saying is whether it's going to affect his batting. And to be honest, I'm playing a bit devil's advocate, because I think I'm a bit worried about his form as well. But if you look at Steve Smith and Virat Kohli, their stats have got even better since they've become Test captain. They're both young, quite pretty young players themselves. I think Williamson as well. So I think a lot of England fans have been a bit glass half empty rather than glass half full when it comes to whether Root or not will be able to keep his form up. And at the moment, I think Root's, he's not what I say he's completely fulfilling his potential. I think he's doing well, but he keeps getting out between 50 and 100. Oh. I think one of the main differences in the India series was that Kohli was making match-defining scores, whereas Root kept getting out in the 70s. So if he's got the added responsibility as captain, he might go on to make big hundreds.
Potentially, yeah. I think I read a stat before that no one scored more runs than Joe Root since his Test debut. So, I mean, he's a very, very good player, and I'm sure he'll be able to handle the captaincy. But moving back to Alistair Cook, where do you reckon he's left the team? Has it progressed at all?
I think it did progress under him, but I think Test cricket, like all forms of cricket, is evolving, and I think he has left, you know, at a point where the team do need to start looking towards perhaps a different angle to the way that they're playing. It's very like regimented, and I think they need to be a lot more flexible. They need to be able to adapt to different situations a bit better than perhaps they did under his captaincy. You know, you're not going to go out and score, you know, 400 every time here, and then you're going to get them down for three. You need to, like, be able to change a lot more. And I think one of the other things that they need to look at is their batting. I think that was perhaps one of the weaker points under maybe Cook's captaincy, is that...
Constantly collapsing.
Yeah, obviously you've got Cook, Root up front, who are, as we say, incredible batsmen, but then after that we could go from 50 for none to 100 for six. And that is something that I think whoever comes in as captain next is going to have to maybe assess a bit more.
I'd agree with that. What do you reckon about Cook's legacy?
Yeah, I think when he, from the Ashes 2013-14, when they were absolutely sort of demolished, I think they've come a very long way. I mean, I think they were one win away in the summer from, or maybe even draw away from, going number one. I know that would have been premature, but I think you'd have to say that they did come a fairly long way under Cook. But I think with certain series of late,
you've looked back on them and thought, we haven't really learned anything. We've still got these underlying problems that don't seem to be being improved. So I think maybe the change was right.
And final word from Avi.
I honestly thought that Cook's legacy was great. Like, after the 2013-14 series, the Ashes, I think he actually took the side in a very calm situation after the even the Kevin Peterson problem after the 13-14. Like, he just... He took it in a calm way, and he actually resolved everything, and then the team got better, to be honest, after that. I can't say that he was not a great captain, as he had a lot of underlying problems at the end. He just bought out many players and many talents as well towards the end. So I think he definitely was one of the greatest captains for England. But yeah, at the moment, he needs a change. Like, the team does need a change, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough. I'm sure we'll be talking more about the England captaincy issue over the next few podcasts. But now we're going to move on to the shorter format of the game, the ODIs. And I'm going to ask the panel now who they think the best ODI team in the world is at the moment. Off to you, Laura. Tough question.
A very tough question. I think it's such a hard one to judge, because different teams are very good in different parts of the world. So, I mean, India at home, they look pretty unbeatable. They're very good players. But then you have to throw in Australia and South Africa. I mean, Australia are the reigning world champions in the ICC World Cup. As you have pointed out, South Africa have won the last 13 home games. And I think, to give England their due, they are getting towards they were pushing India in their backyard, and that's quite an achievement for any team. And I think,
what was it, like 3 wickets and a 15-run loss, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it was very close in like the majority of their games. And I think the game's evolving so much that it's switching all the time. Who's on top is constantly changing. I mean, who will be on top in the Champions Trophy might be completely different to when we're playing in 2018.
Yeah, Joe, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it was a good point about like different teams are better in different conditions, and I think the team that are probably the best all round at the moment in all conditions, you'd probably say South Africa, because they won in India last year in the ODI series. I know they got battered in the test matches, but in the ODIs they won. And I think you look at South Africa's team, and I think they've got a very strong bowling attack. I think Mbabane's like very, very good. Tahir is like dependable, always gets wickets. And then you've got people like Quinton de Kock, who, you know, really destructive batsmen. So I think South Africa, I think they need to win one more game to go top of the rankings, and I think that probably be deserved.
Yeah, I honestly think as well, like, South Africa is definitely the contenders for the Champions Trophy. Like, having a side which has Faf du Plessis and AB de Villiers, what do you expect? It's one of the best sides at the moment, and their bowling depth as well is really good. With Tahir is he's one of the best spinners, to be honest, right, at the moment. But again, like, if you've seen South Africa playing like really pressure situation, they tend to choke in them, like quarterfinals, semi-finals. They play really good in the group stages. They win almost every game, but when they reach the main situation, they just falter.
Last World Cup.
Yeah, last World Cup.
New Zealand in the semi.
Yeah, and then before, I think Sri Lanka, Sri Lanka just demolished them out of nowhere, like just a team which suddenly just came up. But again, to be fair, like at the moment, South Africa are the best team. Are definitely the contenders, are the favourites, but you never know, because again, it just keeps fluctuating, because no one expected, again, the T20 World Cup last year, which is played in India, to be won by West Indies. They weren't not the favourites to win it. They were definitely contenders, but again, like, cricket is a game, it's just any man's, the ball is in anyone's court at the moment. But again, yes, South Africa is definitely a team.
Are there any other contenders? New Zealand, West Indies, as you just mentioned?
I don't think West Indies in the ODI, I think all their best players don't ever play, really, do they? But like Noreen, maybe, I don't know. But I think New Zealand in England might have a good chance, because
they've beaten Australia.
Yeah, they're very good at home, and English conditions aren't too dissimilar to New Zealand. And they've got a very good bowling attack, but I just wonder about their batting a little bit. I think they struggle to finish games. I think they haven't really got any good finishes.
Yeah, similarly. Similarly, I think about India as well, because they have a really good batting depth, and then the bowling just keeps faltering. Because if you have a team which has Kohli, and then I think some scores are improbable, like they can easily chase it down. But again, the bowling, if Indian team is sent out to bat first, they definitely tend to lose more matches than they are sent out to bowl first. So
I think with New Zealand as well, like when they lost Brendan McCullum, I mean, when you have such an influential player who can literally take a game away from you in overs, that is very, very hard to replace, and they haven't found that person to replace him.
They're still very reliant on Ross Taylor and Kane Williamson. And Guptill.
Guptill, yeah.
It must be a tough defeat to take that World Cup final as well, to come back from that. Do you think it was their one chance to win a major tournament?
Yeah, I think it was. It was not probably not the
well, this
not one
generation's
chance, but
one chance.
But yeah, I think it would have been a definitely hard hit on them, because having said they won all the games up to the finals, and that would have definitely been a hard hit on Brendan McCullum and the side at that time. But again, like, Australia were not a bad side, to be fair. They had the ups and downs again.
It's the most ideal conditions for them as well, you know, being at home and in Australia.
Didn't play an away match. They played every game in New Zealand until the final.
Which speaks volumes. They won all the games in there in New Zealand and lost the one that was in Australia. So,
well, moving on to the next question, which we've mentioned briefly about different teams playing well in different conditions. And I wanted to ask you, why at the moment is it so hard for teams to play away from home?
I personally think that it does have a lot to do with conditions. You know, if in the subcontinent, you've got very good players of spin, but not necessarily of bounce. And then in England, you know, you've got good players of bounce, but not very good players of spin. And it's similar in New Zealand and Australia. And I think the countries tend to develop players who are fit for home conditions, but not necessarily get the exposure to play in like subcontinent conditions and other conditions. So, like, if you look at England, since Graham Swan, I mean, we've got Moeen Ali and Adil Rashid, who are good spinners but aren't to that same level as Graham Swan. And I think that because in England spin doesn't play as big a factor as it does in other areas of the world, and we focus more on bringing along our fast bowlers, that's maybe where we dip out. And then in other countries, you know, it's very different based on those conditions. And I think it's maybe blur. It might start to blur a bit more now that you've got more people playing all across the world in the different tournaments. But yeah, I think conditions definitely play a role.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that I think if you go back a few years, thinking about like the Ashes 2005, I think when Australia came over then, they were pretty much here all summer. They played a series of like warm-up matches and games, you know, against sort of Bangladesh and things like that. And they were here for like all the summer. Whereas now there's so much cricket played, and the IPL and things like that take so much time that teams, they don't really get proper warm up games. I mean, England went to India and they didn't even play a warm up match against, you know, against a team. And I think
you could say Bangladesh, but that's a bit harsh.
Yeah, the Beatles, isn't it? But I think that's part of the problem, is that tours aren't as long, so people aren't getting exposure to conditions as they used to be. And I think with 2020, because there's so much bat on ball, I think Australian players struggle when they come here now, because they're so prone to hitting the ball, seeing the ball and hitting the ball, that they've forgotten to where the stump is, and they're forgetting to leave the ball. So I think there are a couple of problems that could be culpable to it. But
yeah, I definitely agree with you, Joe, on that. Like, I even think, like, yeah, again, like, it's not like if you see like players or teams playing in countries like when England come over, they play like six games, but then they go off again. Like, so if you think in that perspective, I think, like, yeah, they need more pressure, more situations where they actually play in such situations to win the game, or again, just.
So the ICC this week, I think it was, are discussing proposals for a new sort of test championship with leagues, maybe. Do you reckon this would be a good idea going forward? More time to play the tests, so better test matches?
I think it depends how they implement it. I think that from a perspective of getting people coming to test matches,
daylight
it'll definitely
well.
Help, because test cricket is notoriously struggles to bring in the crowds, because why go and watch 5 days when you can watch somebody bash it around in a few hours? But I think with that added element of competition, I think it will be very good for Test cricket. And I think it will help the players to develop, because from going to playing to a packed out stadium to playing in front of a few thousand is quite difficult. And I think, by having that added element of competition as well, it gives the team something to strive for. Because if you're playing a two Test series and one team's won the first game, what's to stop you from just putting the brakes on in the second match and playing it out for a draw so that you win the series? It kind of adds that extra element of competition, I think.
Joe, how would you implement this sort of
league? I read about it today, actually, and I think it does look really, really good. The way they're going to do it, I think, is they'll have like a 9-3 format. So the top nine teams in the world will play each other in like a 2-year period, and it'll be a league. And then there'll be the other three teams will be like Afghanistan, Ireland, and
Zimbabwe being put back in, I think.
And they'll sort of play each other. But then if England are going to the UAE to play Pakistan, they'll play Afghanistan in like a warm-up test match, like a one-off test match. So I think it is a good thing, and I think you do need to get a bit of context to test cricket, because at the moment it's just a bit, I think it's on the way down, and I think they do need to do something to give a bit of a boost.
Yeah, I definitely think it'll be a great idea if this could be implemented, because if you see, again, methods like, the ICC do implement ways, but then why would people go to watch matches which are played out in 5 days rather than watch matches which are played in like an hour, or like maybe like 12 hours, something like that? But then again, if you think about it, like, if the implementation is right, like, which I'm not sure if ICC will did really well, because again, like, they've had the ups and downs recently, so hopefully if it's going great, like, we can see a good league or a test league, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I really hope that they take to that, like, including the affiliate nations in it. I hope that they don't just brush those to the side.
How imperative is that for the competition of test match cricket?
I think for the future of cricket, it's imperative, because it is, rather than just having the nine teams that we always have, it's giving those nations a chance for cricket to grow. And I know originally there was talk of there being a two-tier system where you have affiliate nations in one league and test nations in another, but how is that helping the affiliate nations? Because they're just playing people of a similar standard. They're never going to get to face those like top teams, and they're always going to be getting relegated and then promoted. And yeah, I think if they stick to it, I think it will be good for Test cricket, because it will bring it to more countries as well.
There are plenty of teams in the second tier of ODI cricket as well. I imagine a few of them would be wanting Test match status. Do you reckon they would be pushing for that, especially Ireland and Afghanistan?
I think Afghanistan definitely will be, because having seen them in even the 2020 World Cup, when they're the only team, I think, which beat the champions, which beat West Indies in a group game. But they have a lot of potential, to be fair. Again, like, they didn't have much great facilities, but having said that, they're playing really good cricket, and coming up amongst the top teams is one other thing that I would look forward to again in Afghanistan and even in Ireland.
Yeah, I think with Afghanistan as well, it'd be great for them to have Test cricket, because obviously it's been a country that's been in considerable turmoil for quite a long time, and for them to be able to play the likes of England and Australia in a Test match, I think would give the country a great boost, although it's only sport. But I think sport sometimes can go a long way to giving the country a bit of a morale boost. So
also, it means that they can keep hold of their players. I mean, if you look at, you know, Ed Joyce, Owen Morgan, Boyd Ranking, they all came to play for England because you just don't get the same opportunities in Irish cricket. And if those affiliate nations start to get more opportunities, then they might be able to hold on to their players a bit better.
We've got an ODI series, I think, with Ireland, haven't we?
Yeah, in May, I think.
Maybe we could use an opportunity as, instead of playing like India A, when you go to India, you play tests against Afghanistan, as Joe said before. But anyway, we'll probably be discussing that as those changes come out over the next few weeks. But we're going to move on to our final topic, which is our featured upcoming player. I think last week we talked about Adam Zampa, and this week it's Haseeb Hameed. And Laura, over to you. How impressed are you with him so
I'm
far?
I'm really impressed with Haseeb Hameed. I think he's got a very bright future for England. I mean, he's only 20. He's played three test matches where he's got 219 runs. against India as well, so not an easy side to play in India as well. Many people who have been in the game for a lot longer have struggled, and I mean, you just have to look at his first class record as well. He's scored, he's played 39 innings, he's scored 1,674 runs, and he's got 411 50s at 20, which, you know, when you're 21, it makes you feel like you've achieved a little less in your life.
Yeah, I think, as a Lynx fan, I watched Haseeb Hameed pretty early before, like, he became well known, and I think the thing that stuck out to me was just how late he played the ball. He stands out. I mean, and also in India, I think his footwork was just, if you compare Hameed and Duckett, one failed and one was successful. I think Duckett kept getting caught on the crease, whereas you can't really do that against spin. You need to go right forward or right back. And Hameed's footwork was just so solid, and I think he's got a great future in the game. I'd be surprised if Hameed doesn't play 100 test matches at least.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Haseeb Hameed, to be honest. Like, even during the India series, him playing with a broken finger or some sort of injury, he scored I think 60 runs that day, but that's quite impossible having a broken finger. But His personality or persona he brings onto the field, the calmness in nature, like, somewhat resembles, like, Sachin Tendulkar when he was, like, in his yester ages. But, again, like, he is definitely a great pick or a great find by Trevor Bayliss. But, yeah, again, like, I would definitely be surprised if I don't see him playing a lot of games for England or not being picked up in the side for the next few test series.
Excellent. And as a fellow Lynx fan, I can say that I saw him quite early as well. I am very impressed with him so far. And, well, that's all we have time for on today's podcast. Join us again next week. Thanks, RV, Joe and Laura, for coming on. And we should be back next week with another podcast. Thanks, guys.